episode of Life and Books and Everything is brought to you by Crossway, publisher of my new book. I don't write the ad copy. They tell me what books they want me to highlight, and as long as I like them, which I do, so I guess I do like this book. The biggest story, Advent 25 Lift the Flap Devotions for Families. So this is a book in the biggest story suite of books. It's a new book. This isn't just pulling out some Christmas stories from one of the other books, but I wrote 25 new chapters. It's about a page each. You could probably read through it in 3 or 4 minutes with your family. And it goes through 24 Old Testament prophecies about the Messiah. And then Christmas, the 25th, is the birth of Christ. And Don Clark, always great to work with him with new illustrations. And it is a classic open up a door, a flap, see the Bible verse and go through. This, I think, would be a great thing to do with your family. We're going to do it with our family. And as always, Crossway has done a great job. So do check out the Biggest Story Advent book. It just came out. It's a big, thick, impressive looking book. Crossway's team has done a great job, and I hope you'll enjoy it. We also want to thank our friends at Desiring God for supporting the podcast. Bethlehem College and Seminary is finalizing plans for the 38th annual Serious Joy Conference. This year's theme is Word plus Spirit, the power of supernatural ministry. I'm going to be there. I'm looking forward to it. John Piper, Mark Vrogup, David Mathis, and others will be speaking. I'm speaking on Tuesday night, February 3rd, Holiness, Word and Spirit in Sanctification. So you can hear the theme there about the power of the Word and the Spirit in ministry. Each speaker will explore unique facets of supernatural ministry. It is really important to, as we go through the daily grind of pastoral ministry, church life, to realize there are supernatural things going on, and we want to be reliant on supernatural power. So check out this conference. You can go to Bethlehem's website, bcsmn.edu, to learn more. Greetings and salutations. Welcome back to Life and Books and Everything. I'm Kevin DeYoung, the pastor at Christ Covenant Church in Charlotte, North Carolina, and I am joined for the second time with one of my very favorite Bible teachers and a friend, Alistair Begg, who is here to talk about a new book. Alistair, how is retirement? Are you really retired? Is that really a thing for you? Welcome back. How's it going?
Yeah. Hey, thank you, Kevin. I'm now referring to it as being redeployed.
Right.
Because the big change, of course, is I don't have Sunday, but the ongoing responsibilities and privileges at Truth for Life, along with other things, are more than using up my time and my energies. So it's so far so good.
So I don't, if anyone's watching this on YouTube, I'm going to step back here for a second.
Yeah.
And I have a beautiful Glasgow sweatshirt on. Have you been back to the home country this year?
Yes, I was. I take one of my grandchildren when they turn 13 on a trip, and almost inevitably, no matter where else they want to go and see where their grandfather's from. So, yeah, we were back in Glasgow in the summer, and I'm going back, God willing, in December with the Gettys for their Christmas event, both in Glasgow and then again in Belfast.
When you land there and you get to Glasgow, what feels like home? What triggers that these are my people, this is my home? I assume you still feel some of that even though you've been in America for a long time.
Actually, I feel it very strongly. Perhaps the more time goes by, you know, the longer the distance between departure and this time. Usually it's coming down through the clouds and realizing, oh yeah, it's raining.
And
but then I, you know, I have a little, there's a little poem that goes that this is my country, the land that begat me, and these windy spaces are surely my own. And these who here toil in the sweat of their faces are flesh of my flesh and bone of my bone. And so I do feel that very strongly. And not least of all, when the Ryder Cup comes around.
Well, I was going to ask, that was my next question. Did you root for the winning team?
Of course. But, you know, being a dual citizen, I win no matter who wins. You know, I can switch allegiance as needed.
So Scotty Scheffler is a believer. I believe he goes to a PCA church. Are there guys on the European side that you know of that you can claim some Christian faith?
I'd have to honestly say no. I don't know that. It's one of the happy things about the American team and indeed American golf that there are so many fellows that have
Webb Simpson, a strong Christian. He was one of the co-captains.
That is a wonderful platform for the gospel that these guys have because of the integrity of their lives.
So are you a Rory fan? Have you met him before? Or no. who's the Scottish guy that was McIntyre?
Well, yeah, McIntyre. You know, he kind of popped up from nowhere and he looked like he was a one-hit wonder and then proved everybody wrong.
Maybe you're going to say he looked like he could be in a rugby scrum too.
Yeah, he could actually. He probably won the prize for wearing more sunscreen than any other person on the golf course. I think the fellow that I was hoping desperately would do well was little Tommy Fleetwood.
Yeah, he finally won one this year.
Yeah, won big.
At
Eastlake, he won it all.
I know. Well, would you grow out your hair like Tommy Fleetwood if you could?
No.
Just a big quaff back. No, my hair grows up like a giant white afro, sort of, if I keep growing it. I don't know if you've seen Back to the Future, the guy, the 1.21 gigawatts, the mad scientist doctor.
Yeah.
When my hair grows out, it looks sort of like that, and I can do a really good impersonation of Doc Brown.
I bet you can.
I don't have the boyish good looks like some of us do, Alex. We're going to get to your book, but you're still doing work. I'm sure you're preaching lots and you're with Truth for Life, which is how many of us first came across you and still listen and benefit from your teaching. So you're at Parkside from 83 to 2025. Are you still there? Are you an elder? What's your role continuing at the church?
Well, my intention was always to follow the pattern of my old boss, Derek Prime. And when he came to the end of his time at Charlotte Chapel, he actually went off and worshipped in a Presbyterian church where there was a
sort of the ascent heavenward.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. It was at least a lateral move, let's say that. So I have, between the combination of being gone and of visiting our various church plants and some of the other congregations around us, it's been a strange couple of months, to tell you the truth, and we haven't fallen into a rhythm or a pattern yet. But my intention was always to leave Parkside without my interference, at least in the early months, and so on. And so I'm doing that.
What was that final sermon and final Sunday like? A lot of us watched that, and it seemed like you were trying to be business as usual and not put the attention on yourself, but also a lot of emotions?
Yeah. I think that when we'd had the 40th celebration, there was so much that went along with that I thought it was kind of wrong to try and play that again or improve on it or whatever. And so I decided, no, I'd rather close out a bit like Eric Alexander than John MacArthur. So, I say that with mutual respect for both of them. You know, the difference between a sort of Scottish departure and an American departure.
We like to put on a big show here.
Mm-hmm. It's okay. Nobody does it better.
No, nobody does. And it was we just ran into each other in the hotel lobby at John's funeral, and you did a prayer, and you went out to the burial. What was that like being there? You get to see a lot of old friends. How was that experience?
Well, I think the family burial on the Friday night was just salutary. I mean, it was so personal to their family, obviously. And you and I, in doing funerals, we pronounce the words of committal often. But it was a strange sensation to commit John's earthly remains to the ground, and to feel that sense of finality there, apart from a new heaven and a new earth.
When did
It
you
was a
meet?
it was a privilege.
When did you first meet John?
79. I was
Really?
20. I was
Wow.
27. I invited him to come to Scotland, and Luis Palau had preached for John and was going to do evangelistic work in Scotland, and he invited John to go to Scotland on his behalf to soften up the Presbyterians in the Highlands. And so those two invitations coincided. And so we met on a kind of snowy day in March, when he and Patricia and one of his elders and his wife came off the plane at Prestwick Airport. And that was the beginning of a friendship that had all kinds of elements to it throughout the years. But there was a real heartbeat of affection that lay there, and admiration on my part, along with affection for
And
him.
as many people know and said even at that service, for the John obviously was a stalwart for truth and for the things that he believed in and wasn't afraid to call out error as he saw it. And yet all of us who knew him, and you knew him better than I did, but knew him to be such a warm, gracious, generous man. I mean, he really was in any sort of, I mean, I saw him in closed door meetings and groups where people were maybe even needling him or prodding him or look, and he was not an irritable gentleman.
No, he wasn't. He was very magnanimous, actually. And loved to laugh.
Well, then you got along with him. And I gotta spend some time at the service with your good friend with Sinclair. I always feel like Sinclair and I sort of, who are we going to talk to here? Okay, you're a good Presbyterian safe space for me. Did you get to spend any time with him?
Yeah, just a little bit. But he was in full flight.
Yeah,
He
he
had a lot
was.
of responsibilities. But we keep in touch routinely, so yeah. Sinclair has, if you talk about stalwarts, he just continues to prove, exactly that in the gospel. And he's a real gift to us at this point in history.
Does anybody in America say his name correctly?
I don't think so.
So, Sinclair. No, I didn't say it right.
No, Sinclair.
Sinclair.
Sinclair. Yeah,
Sinclair.
Sinclair.
Okay. All right. Well, we'll keep going. I'm going to get to the book. One more question. So your messages, are you preaching new messages for Truth for Life? What's your ongoing work with them? And tell us, how did that start? And it must have exceeded your wildest imaginations of how many people it would reach.
Sure. Well, taking them in reverse order, it started really as a result of the initiative of Bob Butts, who it leads the program and heads up the operation here. I always say, and it's true, that the vision was his and the voice is mine. And so, I have been following down that path. At the moment, though, the program has so much material in it that if you heard the program today, you wouldn't hear it again for another 7 or 8 years. So, in terms of being able to continue that, however, we're toying with all kinds of things about how to, particularly, I've got a real interest in, I'm sure I'd be interested in your thoughts on this, but I'm really concerned for the for the student population, you know, about 18 to 25, who's listening perspective is very different from the demographic that has grown up on, you know, standard radio. Mm-hmm. And so in reaching them, obviously we reach them when we go and speak to them at colleges, at universities, and so on. And so I continue to do that. But we're really toying with if there are ways to do shorter media pieces that may serve as almost like a starter or an hors d'oeuvre that mm-hmm. would be a pointer in the direction of, you know, so that people who listen, if they listen to you or they listen to me, they find out about A, B, C, D, and E, and if their interest is stirred, then it sends them off in that direction. So we're thinking these things at the moment, but without...
it's a really good point, and it's a dilemma that I'm sure you feel, and we do too, is to what degree should you just, hey, this is, I preach these messages, we put them out, maybe you divide them into two messages over two programs, people are going to find them, this is what we do, we're not here to give the audience and tickle their ears. And on the other hand, okay, we won't change the content of it, but, you know, people pass around TikToks, and you don't have to do TikToks, but, you know, 1.5 minute video, those are the things that get traction. And I noticed this about 7 or 8 years ago, as I was talking to our pastoral interns, and it finally dawned on me, you know, these are smart people and they read books. These are pastoral students, but it dawned on me their communication is through podcasts. They're not reading articles.
Right.
Now they will, and they'll get around. But I said, how many of you would be more likely to read an article that took you 15 minutes or listen to an hour and a half podcast? Mm-hmm. Like, oh yeah, the podcast for sure.
Right.
They do it in the car. They do it right. While they're working out, doing other things. So, and then the YouTube space, I haven't done that very much, but that's where so much of the conversation, the apologetics. So,
right.
Yeah, you guys must be wrestling with the same things.
Yeah, exactly that. Because not out of a desire to dumb down the thing,
yeah.
But just to establish contact. I mean, if we ever talk about this little booklet, but
yeah, we will.
The irony is
that this, I was going to ask about
yeah,
that.
Yeah, this thing emerged out of a silly ending, really, to an attempt on my part to expound, you know, 1 Corinthians, and out of a sense of frustration, you know, I haul off with this illustration, augmented piece, and suddenly that becomes that, you know.
That's like your most famous.
Yeah, it's sort of
moment.
It's so depressing. Yeah. Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. So, no, I mean, for example, you know, to say to, you know, I just imagine saying to a student, you know, it's more important to go to a funeral than to go out for pizza, which is Ecclesiastes, right?
Mm-hmm.
Just, they say, no, that can't be the case. Well, yeah, let me tell you why it's the case. You know, in a minute and a half. You know, I don't know.
Yeah, how you yeah. do that. And even when I was first starting out ministry 20 years ago, maybe into my early 30s, it seemed like young people, as I was back then, they were, if you ask, what are you listening to? It was, I'm listening to an Alistair Begg sermon, and maybe it was a John Piper sermon, John
right.
MacArthur's. They're listening to sermons, and some people still do, but now it's, what podcast are you listening to? And there's good things, and, you know, this is a podcast, so we believe in them. But come back to this, because I haven't gotten to the book yet. The Man on the Middle Cross, Are You Going to Heaven? Talking to Alistair Begg about this new book, published, it says Truth for Life, and by 10 of those publishing, our friends there. It's about 40 pages. It looks like it's three messages or maybe three snippets from, but talk about what the title is here. So this clip, The Man on the Middle Cross, set it out for us. Had you done that before? Was this an Alistair Begg staple? Had you heard someone else say that line? What was the context? Who are the old people sitting behind you? Did they like it? Some of them did.
No,
I wasn't sure about others.
I don't know about you, Kevin, but I do not like people behind me when I'm speaking. Do not like it. If I can control it, they won't be there. But I was down there for Southwestern Seminary, I think it was, and the event took place in that somewhat austere church building with the choir behind me. And when I later saw the video and saw those people behind me, it confirmed the sense that I had in seeking to expound the text. I don't know how you describe these things, but sometimes I feel that when I'm preaching, I feel like I'm in an old British telephone kiosk with that thick glass, and I can see the people outside, and I'm speaking, but I've got no conviction that what I'm actually saying is going beyond the thick glass.
I felt that.
Yeah, and I think that was where I was with that. Now, the notion of the thief and going to heaven, I had often thought about. I just because silly thought, really. And well, what would happen, you know, if he showed up? I mean, what would he say? And in frustration, you know, that's what I went off on. And I wasn't surprised when I saw the faces of some of the people behind me. But I mean, it's just the notion of the free offer of the gospel and the finished work of Christ and that reality that was driving me at that moment. And so this little tract here, which we did at the behest of Jonathan Carswell and, you know, 10 of those, is simply, because Jonathan said, we'll put that out as a little tract. And I said, well, that's going to be like a page and a half. And so I said, why don't we include, why don't we take three encounters, and let's take the lady at the well and the man on the bed, the lady at the well looking for love and not finding it, the man on the bed not realizing what his greatest need was, and then, of course, the thief on the cross. And so that's the hope is that it might prove to be at least a starter for somebody in conversation with a friend.
It's really good. I read through it last night. Like I said, it's 37 pages, 38 pages. I have some books that are even shorter than this.
Oh,
Alistair.
Good. I feel much better now.
Pamphlet-like.
Yeah.
So it really is, you will benefit if you're a Christian, but it really is, you know, the subtitle, Are You Going to Heaven? You can hand this to somebody,
right,
and they can really be affected by it, and you're speaking to them in a way that they can understand. I want to go back to that viral moment. Were just homiletically when you got to the punch, you know, the man on the middle cross said, "I could come."
Right?
Did you feel like, you know, Eric Little? I feel God's pleasure in me. Did you feel like this? Thank you, Lord. This came out the way I wanted to. Or did you still sense I'm in the British phone kiosk and I don't know that this is connecting?
You know what? I don't honestly remember. But what you should know is that I never intended doing that. That was not in my preparation. So it was all it was all, like I say, out of almost a sense of frustration. Feeling that I don't know if anybody really understands what I'm saying here. And that's when I just said, I mean, think about the man on the middle cross, for example. Imagine. And then, so, yeah, I think I sensed that, but I don't know because of the video clip, it's a horrible, I don't know about you, but I hate to see myself on those things.
It's
brutal. I mean, it's not a nice thing.
I think you look in that clip like you always do.
Yeah.
I've learned if my wife comes out and says, how do I look? I said,
Yeah.
Same as you always do.
Yeah, oh, that's
wait,
good.
I'm not sure
that's
if that
good.
Was right.
Yeah.
Were you surprised when, I mean, I don't even know who first pulled out those 2 minutes, and now it's in several different, you know, streams that you can find it, and it still goes around. And I mean, not credit to you, but credit to the Lord. It is a powerful, wonderful gospel clip. Did you have any idea someone was pulling this? Were you surprised that it went viral?
Oh, yeah. I was surprised that anyone pulled it. And then when the people here told me, said, you know, a lot of people have watched this and passed it around. I mean, we had a country western singer come to Parkside. You know, he wrote a song called The Man on the Middle Cross. And I've actually seen people wearing T-shirts, you know, that say this on the back.
Isn't it amazing? So, you can't control, especially in this digital age. Now, somebody is going to write the Alistair Begg biography, and it's going to be Alistair Begg and The Man on the Middle Cross.
That's it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Co-sponsored by his friend, Kevin DeYoung.
Right.
Yeah.
We want to take a moment to thank our friends at Greenville Presbyterian Theological Seminary for supporting the podcast. Check out GPTS and their Master of Divinity program. I love their tagline, "We train pastors." That's what they're seeking to do, to train pastors to serve local churches here and around the world. You'll have classes with other men who are looking to be discipled in person with professors there at GPTS. I know Jonathan Master, the president there, is a good friend of mine. So you can check them out at admissions@gpts.edu. If you have questions, maybe you're interested, or you know a young man in your congregation who ought to think about pastoral ministry, they would love to send you a copy of Thomas Murphy's Pastoral Theology book to encourage you on your journey. So do check out gpts.edu. I also want to mention our friends at Reformed Theological Seminary. Of course, I have the privilege of being a professor here in Charlotte, and my good friend Blair Smith is the new president and doing a great job. Of course, Ligon Duncan has been a friend for many years, the chancellor of the RTS system. There are campuses throughout the country. Hopefully there's one where you live or nearby, and there's also a hybrid MDiv where you can get residential courses and week-long in-person intensives. So there's lots of flexibility to help you learn the Bible, learn theology, prepare for pastoral ministry. Of course, in-person residential learning is the best way to go. If you can do that, we encourage that. But for those who need a little more flexibility, they have different options at RTS. So thankful for RTS and the work they do. Check out rts.edu to learn more.
Kevin, we've known each other for a long time now, brother.
Yeah.
I mean, you're getting old, too.
I know. I have much more gray hair than
you. How old
than
are you
do.
Now?
I'm 48.
Oh, you're 48?
Yeah.
That's so good. 48 is nothing. My son turns 47 this month.
47.
So,
do you feel old?
No, I don't feel old. But I tell you, when you feel old is when on your phone you have to put in your birth date. And then you have to scroll back from 2025. And I'm like, oh, golly, it's got to be coming up soon, you know. So you got to go back 73 years. But
I know
our times are in his hands.
So tell me about these other two vignettes in this little book. Where did they come from?
Oh, just from preaching. But I've always... You know, way back when I was still in Scotland, there was an American guy who did, he had a book called, it was an evangelistic book on John chapter 4. I forget the fellow's name. It was influential. And I found it helpful as a teenager about, it was, he basically had it as, this is how you witness to people. Mm. And I remember at the time when I read it, because one of his points was, if you encounter an interruption, as Jesus encountered, then this is what you need to do. And I always said to myself, I'm not sure that was an interruption. When the lady asks, where do we go? Mm-hmm. Do we go here or do we go there? And I thought that was the first inkling of her saying to herself, well, if there is, you know, a solution, if there is forgiveness, will it be in Gerizim or will it be in Jerusalem? And Jesus says, well, no, the time is coming and, you know, it's now here. So that I've lived my life with that lady at the well, as it were. Yeah. And the man on the middle cross, the man on the bed, of course, is such a fascinating encounter that, I mean, if we had carried that fellow there and dropped him down and Jesus had said what he said, I mean, I think in all honesty, we would have said, no, we didn't come for this.
Yeah, right.
No, we came for the real deal. I mean, we can get to the forgiveness part maybe, but let's get the legs done.
And I'm always thinking about the poor guy's roof.
Yeah.
Like, what did he... What? I'm already hosting this thing.
Yeah.
You're jammed in here. Yeah. I didn't get this insured for this event.
Yeah. Nobody would ever have forgotten it.
No. I'm talking to Alistair Begg, and I know our time is short and you have a tight window here about Alistair's new book, The Man on the Middle Cross, published by 10 of those. Just a couple more questions. You talk about getting older, and all of us do get older until the Lord brings us home. I kind of hate this question, but I'm going to ask it to you anyways. When I get this question now as a middle-aged guy, what do you wish your younger self would have known? You know, do you have things you think, man, if I could have known at 48, I would have been really happy. Or maybe it was just being confirmed of the same things that you already did know. What would you say to your younger self from 20 plus years ago?
Well, I think I would go back further than 20 years. I mean, I mean, 48 is a pretty good age. But pastorally, I think that somewhere along the line, it suddenly occurred to me that my early self was far more hortatory or hortatory than I became. I don't know if it was a moment or it was listening to someone, and I realized that I was far too quickly into the imperatives without having dealt with the indicatives, and so that I think was a seismic shift. So I could go back and listen to old talks and figure it out, but that would be one thing. I'm not known for compassion. In fact, any attempt at compassion has, you know, proved my downfall. But I think just the sense of, you know, Jesus, you know, what is Jesus actually like? He doesn't cry aloud in the streets. He doesn't draw attention to himself. He doesn't finish other people's sentences. He doesn't talk down. I guess that's the lifelong quest. I mean, that's what the Spirit is doing. It's conforming us to the image of His Son. And I suppose looking back, I wish it had happened a little quicker. And even at this point, I often say to myself, I don't know whether my reaction just now is the reaction of an aging man or is the reaction as a result of the ongoing work of grace. Mm-hmm. So...
You've been married 50 years.
Yeah,
it's amazing. It is. What would Susan say? This is a dangerous question. What would she say if somebody said, "Tell me something good about Alistair that you don't see"? And what would she say? You know, give me some dirt or a foible or an idiosyncrasy that might be hidden from view. She knows you better than anybody.
Yeah. Well, she would be very slow to point out my faults in public. So we'll leave that alone. But I know one of the things she would say is, he writes me notes. He writes me notes. So that, that has meant a lot to her over time, so that routinely on a Sunday, I would leave behind a scribble that would essentially say, we're in this together. Without you, I don't go with you, I go better. I didn't do that every single Sunday, but that kind of thing. And also she would say, I think she would say two things. He writes me notes and he makes me laugh.
Yeah.
That's it. Yeah. I'm not sure that's a great accolade, but she would say that.
There's a line in the Ocean's 11 movie that I don't know if we're allowed to say that, but that came out on my honeymoon. And so Trisha and I saw that. And George Clooney and Julia Roberts, you know, they're divorced, but she's dating the bad casino guy. And he says to her, does he make you laugh?
Mm-hmm.
And she says, he doesn't make me cry.
Mm.
But then by the end, you know, they get back together and he was a bad guy. And so just think of laughing. Trisha will, that's a line that we say, and Trisha will say, well, but you do make me laugh.
That's
and I
good.
Say, well, I hope I don't make you cry. No,
that's
no,
good.
not too often.
I
put that out there to couples, and we all have different personalities, and some people may just not laugh a lot. Like I say in my pastoral ministry class on preaching, here's a good rule of thumb, young men. If you're not funny in real life, don't try to do it in the pulpit.
Exactly. No, exactly.
If you have a sense of humor like Alistair does, and it comes through, just put a governor on. I need to put a governor on it. But don't go up there and here's the funny part. But when couples stop laughing, stop acting silly together, there's something. Do you have any other marriage thoughts after 50 years? Do you have a marriage book? Are you going
to
write
one? Yeah, I did. Well, I did one a long time ago, which somebody wrote to me and said, aren't you tempting fate? Because it's called Lasting Love with the subtitle, How to Avoid Marital Failure. And I've often thought that at this vantage point, there are some things that I might go back and revisit with the advantage of the passage of time. You know, what I say to myself all the time is the basics is what makes it. I mean, it's like a golf swing. It's not easy, but it's straightforward.
Mm.
And marriage is not easy because we're sinful people stuck together for a lifetime. There's no trip to Hawaii that can compensate for the absence of a prayerful, apologetic, please forgive me, I will try better tomorrow on a week-by-week basis. And so I think oftentimes we look for the key being out there somewhere hidden from us, when in actual fact, if we have our Bibles and we are sensitive to the work of the Spirit of God, we've all that is needed. And a couple of good friends that will point out, like I had a very good friend who's gone to glory now. And one time he said to me, and I hate to even recall this because it's so painful, but we were playing golf together and he said, can I say something to you? Which is never a good sign, you know, because it's usually something's coming. And he said, last night when we were all together and you left the room, we got to hear from Susan, and she has a lot to offer. And then he said, but when you're in the room, you suck in all the air out. You need to learn to be quiet and allow her to flourish, which was painful. But I bring it to mind because if we are the naturally talkative one, we talk. The silent one is naturally silent. So the talkative one needs to be told to button it up a bit, and the silent one is to be encouraged to come out. And that's the dance of marriage, I think.
Oh, that's a good word. I've often thought, and I don't know how you can, this is a heart thing. It's hard to just tell yourself to feel this way, but I think I have a good marriage. And one of the secrets, I think, is, do you feel like, even in the moments where you're frustrated with the other person, do you feel like I am really the lucky one?
Yeah.
You know, to use the Calvinist term.
That's going to say, as Luther used to say.
Yeah, right. It used to say.
Yeah.
And that's easy if anyone knows my wife. You know, when we got engaged, her parents thought I was getting a good deal, and my parents thought I was getting a good deal. But it's that feeling of, I am really, really fortunate.
Yeah.
I have gotten a really good deal here. And once you start to feel like she has the good deal and I got a raw deal here,
yeah,
and I've had, then your heart is going in a bad direction.
That's right. Yep.
So give me last question. I know we both have a stop here. As you know, Lord willing, you, I mean, you look great. You seem to be in good health, I hope. What are you hoping for by God's grace in this next season of ministry here in your 70s?
Yeah. Well, I hope that I can, well, I guess the answer is in Psalm 71, verses 17 and 18, which where the psalmist says, you know, Lord, you've been my God since I was a child, and now to old age and to gray hair, do not forsake me until I pass on the truth to the generations yet to come. So whether that is on a very personal level with my grandchildren, which I'm privileged to have close by me, whether it is with other young pastors who are looking for encouragement, I hope to be able to do things that are multiplicatory. So I'm glad of every opportunity to speak to students, because they've got their lives in front of them, to speak to pastors because I am a pastor and because I love the church, and to speak in the context of mission, because the people that are across the country and across the world are on the forefront of the Great Commission. And so those are the kind of things. Those are the kind of things we'll see.
Wonderful. Thank you, Alistair, for being on the podcast. And just mention again, The Man on the Middle Cross, Are You Going to Heaven? This little booklet from 10 of those, and has three little snapshots of people that encounter Jesus. And if you haven't seen the clip, I bet everybody has, but go and bring that thing up a couple more million on The Man on the Middle Cross. So thank you, Alistair. Thank you for your lifetime of Bible teaching, for your friendship, and look forward to the two of us being in the same place at the same time again.
So do I. Thank you, Kevin.
Thank you, Alistair. Thank you to everyone for listening or watching. This is Life and Books and Everything, a ministry of Clearly Reformed. You can get episodes like this, lots of other resources at clearlyreformed.org. Until next time, glorify God, enjoy Him forever, and read a good book.